Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30. Today, we have two rounds in the magazine. Round number one, we're going to talk about some electronic warfare. Recently, I was on a podcast called Macrodosing with my good pal PFT. And we talked about these drones that are happening in warfare really across the globe. So the Navy and the Army and the Air Force, not really us, not really the Marines. They have come up with ways and they're having new technology that's coming out. We're going to tell you about some of that. Really, really interesting. Round number two, there was a Navy chief a couple months ago that got court-martialed and he was forced to retire, got busted down, went to the brig for about 30 days for a group chat, something that he sent in a group chat. And the Navy had a court-martial about it, and some of the decisions were overturned, and it'll affect every single listener that is still on active duty here in a big, big way. So I feel like it's a pretty important topic, and I haven't seen a lot of folks talking about it. But if you are group chat, if you got multiple ranks in your group chat, you better be careful because they're coming for you, which is stupid. But we're going to talk about that later. First up, we have some news. It's just me. Just cons, because Kate has had her baby. Way to go, Kate. She did
Yay! She did it. Congrats.
Did she put out how much the baby weighed?
Yes.
She did, right? Okay. Yes. I don't want to give out any information that she hasn't given out because that's hers, obviously. But the baby weighed in at 9.94 pounds. A big old chunker butt. She sent us a picture. He's got rolls on rolls on rolls on rolls. The dude needs to go on BCP right away.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. When she sent that picture and said he was 9 pounds, I was like, you sure? You sure he's not like 12, 13?
Yep.
Big old Cons, boy.
Cons, before we started recording, brought in Maggie so I could see a live action of Maggie. They're about the same size.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
They're pretty close. So she's excited. She is in love with her new baby. She says that she can't get enough. She stayed up all night staring at him, but we all know that because Kate's a great mom. Before we get going, though, I have big news over at my house. I've told you guys that I love my new neighbors. Well, we are going to have a record club. All the dudes that live around here, we all got record players. And each month, we are all going to buy one record. And then everybody's going to come over to my house and we're going to listen to those four records. And everybody can talk about why they got that, which one they like. We can all discuss to see if we want to get it. So that sounds like a great idea, right? Like dads getting together doing that.
It is. And it reminded me. So there's another thing that got started in my one of my circles where there's like a whiskey exchange at Christmas. And it's the same thing. You buy like one bottle, but in exchange for that one bottle, you get like 30 bottles. And then I got introduced to a book club recently where you buy one book, but in exchange you get 30 books. And it's cool because in the same concept with, No, you keep everything. What's cool with your concept that you're doing here with your neighbors is everybody's got different tastes in music. So you're going to have guys bringing over albums that a lot of times I'm sure you probably wouldn't have picked out for yourself. You might get introduced to a new artist. Mm-hmm. You might get introduced to a new album that you didn't know existed. So I think it's just a fun way to discover new music. And especially in the day and age now with Spotify, where you just kind of like bounce around. You don't necessarily listen to records as much anymore. Mm-hmm. I love this idea. And then the last thing I'll say is I'm kind of stealing this idea and I kind of stole it from my brother-in-law and now I'm kind of stealing it from you. But so in my house that we're moving into, you got a living room. And I feel like so often, like growing up, like everybody had a living room and you never sat in there. It was like the holidays, you went in there, maybe that was where the Christmas tree was, but you never used the living room. I want to use our living room. So I'm going to put a record player in there and I want to build a record collection. So I think this is just great idea.
Yeah, man, I've really enjoyed it. Like I've been growing mine. So it's been fun for sure. So I asked Cons before we go to prepare three. If you had to do, if you're starting your record collection, this is great since you're starting. What are the first three that you're buying? And the caveat here, because your records, there's absolutely no skip. You put it on side A, you flip it over, put it on side B, and you just let the needle go. So what are your three?
And I think that's so important when you can't skip, you got to be really cognizant. You can't, it's funny. Sorry, just a really quick, you remember growing up, like you bought a CD because you wanted like one or two songs, but then it was like the waste. So you got to be really, really mindful. All right. First, no surprise. I think this needs to be a staple of my collection, given how much I am a fan of Bruce Springsteen, but it's got to be Born to Run. I'm torn because Greetings from Asbury Park is probably my most favorite album, but I think Born to Run is more universally accepted as a real breakout album. So in terms of listening with other people, I think that would be more well received than Greetings from Asbury Park, which I think is a little bit more of a deep cut, even though it's his first album. Second,
I knew that was going to be one of your picks.
Like, it had to be.
I knew Bruce is going to be one of these for sure.
It had to be. Do you have any guesses of what my other two might be? Like in terms of the band?
The band? There's a bunch of bands that I've heard you talk about that are kind of Bruce Springsteen adjacent and very Jersey vibes. Can't remember the dude's name because I don't. He's got like a very common white guy name.
You're thinking of exactly who I'm thinking of. And it's the album is the 59 Sound, the sophomore album from Gaslight Anthem. And with frontman Brian Fallon is who
that's the one. Brian Fallon. Yeah, I knew it.
So 59 Sound is a great album. So that definitely needs to be in there, you know, keeping with the Jersey vibes. And then finally,
Hairspray.
So you ruined the surprise. I can't believe you did that. Yeah, you just, right, I was going to tell everybody and you just blurted it out.
Blurted it out. Yeah.
But I think for a lot of people our age, this band was there for a lot of us and certainly there for me in high school and college, that time when you can really start to go to concerts on your own without your parents and kind of figure out your own music tastes. But I'm going with Under the Table and Dreaming by Dave Matthews Band.
Good one. No skips allowed on that one.
No skips. And what I noticed when I was just checking these albums out, now they have a 20th anniversary version with a few extra songs. And I think it's a solid collection of songs where, you know, some of Dave Matthews' later stuff didn't get as well received, in my opinion. Whereas his old original stuff is just top to bottom unbelievable. So those are my three.
Once your first like two albums are so good, first two or three are so good, I feel like it's almost impossible to stack four and five and six on top of each other and meet anywhere near. Like even Garth Brooks, like his new stuff is good, but it's not even anywhere near what the other stuff was.
No, right? Especially given, you're 1,000% right. Just given how much all those other songs get listened to and they kind of cross over into the pantheon to people who might not even listen to that artist, but they know Friends in Low Places, you know, as an example. So I think that's true. I mean, I think if you have a career, the length of some of these artists, you know, Bruce Springsteen, Bob Dylan, Dave Matthews, you can't have that many albums and have them all be just amazing. Like you're going to have some albums that are just not as popular. So
I agree. All right. You ready for my three?
Yes. Yes.
Right. My number one or not number one. There's really no order.
No order. Yeah.
Bare Naked Ladies Rock Spectacle. The live album. I love that album from top to bottom. I listen to it all the time. Even now, like riding my bike, I have it on singing songs that like the Jane. I love that song. Number two. This is a recent one, but I have listened to it for about a year and a half consistently, like not having any gaps. Yeah.
Sturgill Simpson?
Close. Same vein. Tyler Stapleton? Childers.
Tyler Childers.
Can I Take My Hounds to Heaven? There's three different versions and two of them are incredible and not really a Jubilee guy. And then lastly, same vein as you, Cons. I have Dave Matthews, but it's Live at Luther College.
Oh, dude, that's an all-time from him. So many of his live shows are great albums. And I think that's part of the fun, too, when you're doing albums, is you can get those live shows and kind of really feel like you're there. So
yeah,
I think
that's what I really like about it. There's a couple other ones that are really awesome. This is a lot of music talk. But the one that I I really like listening to live albums. Like there's one, any of the ones from Carnegie Hall, like Neil Young from Carnegie Hall, the way that that's recorded, if you're sitting center where your speakers are and you have like good surround sound speakers, you could tell based on the record where they place the instruments. Like, you know that there's a bass guitar off to the left that's a little bit behind the singer. You could tell where the drum set's going to be. And that kind of stuff blows me away because you don't get that like on normal recordings, I don't think. And then I love this, like Dave Matthews, I actually paid from a website to have it printed. There's a website that I found that you could put in any album. It's illegal, but they'll put any album and put it studio quality on a print for you. And they do it really high quality. It's amazing.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please do. Because I mean, one thing though, I will say, I think about starting a record collection that I think is a lot of fun is the idea of going to a record store and just leafing through all the albums that are there and finding something
that a shit ton more for them. You pay so much more for them.
Well, you can, yeah. But like, for instance, I brought my brother-in-law. I found a record store near my brother-in-law's house, and I got like 4 or 5 albums for like, I don't know, like $45, $46. Because like,
yeah, I guess it's all a used store. Yeah,
if you get them pre-owned, yes, because they still sound the same. But yes, if you go brand new, you're talking, you know, $40. It can get expensive if you go brand new. But my point is, like, certain albums, yes, I will search out and just pay full freight for. But then I think what's cool about your collection is, oh, I found this one at this store. You find things that you didn't necessarily think you were looking for, but you know you would like. I'm sure there's a live album somewhere out there of a band that I like that I didn't know that that album even existed. But I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I'll grab that. So
I got one that was like that because I, you know, I went through a bluegrass phase where all I was listening to was like 1970s bluegrass, and I absolutely loved it. There was one, Dolly Parton did a full ass bluegrass album called The Grass Is Blue, and I found it at a local bookstore, used bookstore. I was like, I never heard of this one. Threw it on. It's incredible, man. Like, her voice with bluegrass is just so damn good. It really is. But somebody could come in and they could take it all out simply with a little bit of electronic warfare, because they wouldn't allow the different speakers to have the connections and all that stuff, trying to connect these through. But I'm going to do it with Body Armor. I'm going to drink a little Body Armor while we do it, because DBT is brought to you by Body Armor. We have real hydration, real ingredients packed with electrolytes, vitamin, and nothing artificial. Body Armor has great tasting flavors like strawberry, banana, and blue raspberry. Not only do we hydrate with Body Armor, but some of the best athletes in the world do, like Christian McCaffrey, Joe Burrow, Ronald Acuna Jr., CeeDee Lamb, Bryce Young, Big Cat, Dave Portnoy, Nate Barstool, me, Captain Cons, Kate, the whole kit and caboodle do. And there's tons of them, empty bottles around the different Barstool offices because people like it. You don't have to bring a drink. You just come in and grab one. You should do that too, because Body Armor is delicious. It's available in stores nationwide, and you can head on over now to Body Armor store on Amazon and get yours today. How easy is that? It's available in stores nationwide again, and head over to Body Armor store on Amazon and get yours today. It's a great deal and delicious drink. All right. So a couple weeks ago, I was on macrodosing, and we were talking about the Iron Dome in Israel and how that works. And a lot of people think it's kind of like lasers that shoot and like a legit Star Wars type scene. Well, that's what it sounds like, right? Like the Iron Dome sounds like it's impenetrable.
Yes. And it sounds like it's straight out of a comic book.
Right. And so it has the abilities to take out different missiles that are coming in, and it's automatic where they don't even have to lock in on anything. They just know, and they take off and they intercept these different types of weapons that are coming at Israel. So now in warfare over in Ukraine, there it's happening in some spots in Somalia where they're like the different places that were battling Al-Shabaab. Like, they're using these drones that essentially you could buy on Amazon for like, what, $70, $80, something like that. Like, and you just need one with a claw, like those claws that you'd find at a bowling alley with like a stuffed animal on the inside. They have essentially those on the bottom. They'll carry grenades, they'll identify different troops that are in like trenches. Like I've seen so many videos of entrenched Russians and Ukrainian forces coming over the top and just dropping right on top. I mean, it feels like a video game, just right on top. And there's not shit you could do about it. There's just
So that's what I was going to say. It feels primitive and dated and not efficient at all. But when you
peel modern back, muskets,
yes, that's all it is. It's extremely effective, especially if we can't even stop it or even begin to think about how we would stop it.
Right. And there's a lot of think tanks that come along. And I was talking that I think that they're going to have to build like a chameleon, but it's going to be a large scale chameleon. Well, earlier this week, DARPA and the Naval Times and things like that, like those types of group, they came out and identified some different ways that they are affecting the battlefield. So they have asymmetric warfare, which is small drones that have that non-state actors are using. This one's really insurgents, terrorists, like because Ukraine, good guys, they have the ability to do it. But if they have the ability to do it, so do people that we view as bad guys, like Hamas, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They are using it too. So you don't want to have the enemy with that type of capability.
And you know what, something else I just thought of that didn't exist in the past and is prevalent now. There's so much more on the internet. So in terms of, all right, if I wanted to learn how to inflict damage on an enemy, I could probably find some chat room or something.
Dude,
Reddit that would talk me through all of this. And that's scary.
Without a doubt.
Because what are you going to do? You're going to shut down the internet? You're going to call up Al Gore and say, hey, can you turn off the internet? No, you can't do that. So it really is a challenge.
Elon Musk in Ukraine. Yeah, with Starlink. They turned it off there.
Yeah, please.
So, but another part is like with reconnaissance. You know, like it used to be you had to send out a whole squad for reconnaissance to check it out, a couple people here and there to make sure that everything's going, that you gather all the different information. Now you can take a little $50 drone, fly it like a couple kilometers and see exactly what they're doing in real time. And that's that's the enemy or us. They have precision strike capability where you can hit them over the top. And we can protect our own troops. So there's a lot of good and there's a lot of bad. And I think anybody that has listened to this show for a while probably have the tactical know-how of realizing how grenades dropping directly on top of you or having the enemy be able to watch what you're doing, all of your different movements. Because when we were in Iraq and Afghanistan, that's what gave us the advantage, is having drones overhead, knowing what was going on, being able to identify from the air. And now if the enemy has that capability, it changes. Like they want to go, Israel wants to go house to house trying to clear out Hamas, which we said last week we don't think is going to work because it's never worked. But if they have the ability to go house to house, which is already difficult, and they can tell when your movements are coming, it makes a battlefield that's difficult even more difficult. Would you agree with that?
1,000%. And also, I think it's just a good demonstration of how the battlefield evolves, right? And not just like, hey, you know, America's military is the smartest and we evolve better than anybody else. No, the enemy evolves too. Like you saw it in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, initially, we were driving around in the early days, Humvees that weren't up armored. And then we were getting hit by IEDs. Okay, so what did we do? We adjusted the vehicles we were driving and still getting hit. Okay, then we adjusted and we got MRAPs that were higher. So what did the enemy do? They adjusted the trajectory of the IED. So it's this constant chess match between not just our military, but every military that's involved in a conflict, constantly adjusting. And I don't think that will ever cease. We'll never reach a point where we're like, all right, this is everything that we can ever do in warfare and no more new things allowed. That'll never happen. It'll constantly evolve. And I can even remember when I was in school and you learn basic infantry tactics. And then as we progressed in school, you know, I got there 2002, graduated 2006. As we started getting teachings coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, we adjusted how we trained and what we trained on. And it was so important to do that. Right. You take the lessons learned and you adjust how you operate. And it's so important so that you don't just run into a battle trying to use a tactic that's outdated. So I think
absolutely.
It's interesting.
And it's not just us that's adjusting. It's the enemy. Like, you had a great example of the Humvee and how we had to change that from open air. Like, if you watch Generation Kill, for example, when those fellas were rolling in from Kuwait and going into Baghdad and on the road to Baghdad, it basically looked like a Barbie Jeep, dude. Like, they didn't have shit on the side. Not even the little baby Jeep doors. They didn't even have those. They
were the canvas doors.
Yeah, crop top, heading to the beach is how they rolled in. And the next thing you know, who adjusts? The enemy adjusts. So I think sometimes the bigger militaries have to adjust to the smaller insurgents more so than they have to adjust to us, because they had IEDs. We had to adjust how we had Humvees. Then they adjusted how they have shape charges and how they were going to go. They were using ball bearings to go up straight to the floor. Then we had to do more protective equipment underneath. So then they started coming in from the side. They adjust as we go on. So I feel like the bigger militaries might be playing catch up more so than the other way around, but they have to. That's like, the innovation is a necessity based on what you're experiencing, right? Like, and they're getting smashed after we adjust. So they have to adjust again to have any kind of chance.
When you're a smaller force, it's easier to be agile, right? Like, you saw it on our end when people took matters into their own hands and they said, all right, well, I'm just going to start putting sandbags on the floor of the Humvee, you know, before things got up.
And in planes, dude. They used to do it in like C5s, C17s.
Yes, yes. Wait, I mean, this is not something that was, you know, unique to the GWA. This is going back to every major conflict. We adjusted first, probably a lot of times, against our enemies out of necessity, but you get those smaller forces who just can change on a dime. And, you know, just a byproduct of our military being as big as it is, you know, the wheels of change move a little slower. So it could be a detriment at times.
And one of those ways that we had to adjust, like we did with the Humvees and how they were protected, is the way that they were triggering IEDs. And as the dog handler being on the ground and having to learn those lessons learned, because it really affect, we are out front looking for the IEDs. So how that affected, like, people in my MOS, we had to know like everything that was going on. So one of the major ways that insurgents there were hitting American troops was through the use of telephones, and not just cell phones, but like old school telephones that had like the signal that went over that you would use inside your house. So they would use those. They would use Bluetooth, like not Bluetooth, but like laundry machine timers and things like that. And we had to adjust on how we could deal with that. Well, the dog handler doesn't have the ability to stop cell phones. Like, you could do whatever you want to. They know where it is. They have the lookout. Imagine if they could do that with fucking drones, man. Like, it would be even worse. I don't know how you, and that's the reason why people get paid a lot more money than us to figure this thing out. But we had to adjust. And what did they do? They had the chameleon systems that looked like little dots, like, you know, like that. It's a Halloween thing, but the dots candy, it looked like a coyote colored dots candy that they put on top of the Humvee. And what that did is it sent out electronic signal that essentially crippled all the other electronic system, except for our Blue Force trackers. Like, everything else was really affected, but that didn't stop. So I told PFT a couple weeks ago on macro dosing, I was like, I think with all these drones, what they're going to end up doing is developing essentially a chameleon that encompasses the entire battlefield scope of where you're looking at.
Yeah.
Whether that's from over the top, if it's from using satellites, if it's using like laser guided, whatever, they're going to figure it out. And they did, man. Like, and it didn't even take that long. It took a couple months, like a year in Ukraine for them to figure it out. And what they're doing now is they're introducing planes that have this capability. The planes have the ability to fly over top any spot that they know is super hot, super dangerous, and emit these transmissions that block everything in the area. Like, not just ours, but this time it blocks, or not just theirs, this time it blocks everything. And they're having difficulty like figuring out how can we completely shut down what's going on there. Because if you have that capability, one, your old capabilities don't coincide with those. Mm-hmm. Like, your radios that you had, even if they're on encrypted channels and they're very difficult to get into, if they use signals, these shut those down too.
Yeah.
That's tough, man. Because you need it like in certain really hot spots. So how would you utilize that? You're a commander. You have a platoon out. you know that you're in an area that you're being targeted by drones and you need to have communication with your company. Let's do company commander. You have one platoon that's about one click away and you have them separated by a click each one, which is no problem for normal radios. But now you have this. What do you do, Cons? Do you establish runners? Do you bring in some carrier chickens?
We're going to actually just start to implement pigeons back into the force and just, you know, tie up little notes. But I joke, but I think what you have to do is you have to get rudimentary again. You have to like kind of revert back to methods. Yeah, like maybe not that far back, but you have to revert back to methods that were proven methods that worked in a time before you had radios until you can figure out, okay, how can we jam theirs while also still operating ours? And there, again, to what you said, there are people much smarter than us trying to figure that out. Cause just the idea of, oh, we're going to fly a plane and it's going to emit waves. Like what? Emit waves that are, I can't comprehend that.
So imagine explaining that to a specialist or Lance Corporal. Like this is what we're going to do because we don't focus on land nav, you know, like going back to these primitive methods or the old school methods,
right?
There is no focus on non-GPS related land nav. Like you use it some, and of course, like there's going to be some units.
Have they completely gotten rid of that? Where they just give you a map and a compass? Okay.
But I mean, dude, when I deployed, the only land nav I really had ever done was a couple times in like initial combat training. I did it in corporal's court, sergeant's course, and then staff academy. But all those are academic courses that are taught by POGs, you know, like, so they don't really know either. Like, and it's go pick out this box. And even if you don't know where it is, typically you can run around and see the little red box on the tree. Yeah. Like there's all kinds of different things. You don't have that capability. If you're going after Hamas and caves, you don't have that ability. You have to know how to get there. How do you do that remedial training really fast while people are on the ground? That's difficult. Like all the, but war is tough. You just got to be able to adapt, improvise, adapt, and overcome.
Well, and you figure out a way because you're not going to just, no leader worth their salt is just going to keep running into a battlefield not knowing what to do. They're not going to just keep running in blind. Before they run back in, they're going to figure something out. So maybe they, you know, take a beat for a week and try to teach some remedial land nav to some basics. But hopefully they're still teaching it to a point that at least maybe some leadership has the ability to know how to find different points. But what happens if that leader goes down? I think that's a skill that everybody needs to know, because every time I went outside the wire, had Blue Force Tracker, was super easy. But if that Blue Force Tracker went down, and let's just say,
and they did, you know, a lot,
and they did, they absolutely did. So, and then, you know, for some reason I'm not there. All right. You know, Sergeant, you got to figure this out.
Yeah.
So I think it's important that as much as we utilize technology now in warfare, it's the same reason why when you go to artillery school, before they let you use all the computers, you got to do it old school. You got to do charts and darts to understand how all this stuff works, because God forbid you're in a situation where something is going haywire and you need to put rounds down range. You can't sit there and say, well, we're going to have to wait. Computer's down right now. No, that's not how war works. So I would say they need to figure out some additional methods here.
And the thing that I really like about this is that they're not waiting for the full picture to implement.
Yeah.
They're like, this is the primary objective right now, is stopping these drones because they're killing people. They're making it difficult on us on the battlefield. Whatever happens is secondary and tertiary events, and how we're going to deal with that can come later. But this is the primary objective right now. Stop people from getting killed by drones, and we'll figure out the next step that's technologically easier. And then the third step of how we actually implement all this stuff. I think it's a smart way to approach it for commanders. Yeah. And hopefully a lot of that is lesson learned. Like, we don't need to have everything perfect. Don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Just go out there and do what we can right now. And then give it to the people that are on the ground, because the generals might not be able to figure that out. Like, they're really good at figuring out what they need to add to planes to make this stuff work. When you're actually on the ground, would you rather have a general that's in charge on the ground? Give me a solid XO major as the operations person that could come in and really teach people how to do this quickly, that people that have all the local information because it's not higher echelon stuff that you really need to focus on. It's the small, it's the battalion, maybe the regiment, you know, that you have to focus on. And I think smaller unit leaders from really, I guess, from lieutenant colonel down, but really focusing on the majors and captains, like the company level grade officer.
I mean, General Patton, a good plan violently executed today is better than a perfect plan next week. And exactly, I think that's right. What you have to, the approach you have to take.
And I like what the Marine Corps general, I forget which one it was, but it was a lieutenant general this week that said, look, you can have all the drones you want to, but you try to bring them at American troops and somebody else will raise your children. And I was like, fuck yes, man. Fuck yes. I love that. All right, let's move on to round number two. We're going to talk about something a little bit different, something more stateside. And you know, this isn't something that I really talked about, and it's not really something that you and I dealt with too much when we were in. Like, there was some text messages, but it wasn't nearly the same level that it is now. Like, where almost all communications comes from like WhatsApp or a Facebook group or text messaging, whatever it is. A lot of the communication comes from that. So there was a Navy chief who was having, he was just doing a little goofing, and it was all the other chief mess. So I think that's an important distinction, that everybody in this group chat was an E7 or above, and all of them were enlisted. So you'll have some E7s, E8. I doubt there's E9s in the group, probably just E7s and E8s. So whenever they were doing stuff and garrisoned back at home, like any other group chat, I mean, if you went through the ZBT group chat at any time, you're going to find some problematic shit. Like, you're going to find some stuff that if we wouldn't put it out on our Instagram page, for example, because you have those behind the scenes type things that are going on that you don't want everybody and their brother talking about. But you get a little more loose with like the jokes that you make, like stronger dick jokes, stronger things like that. And it's been a part of military society, I guess, for a long time, being drastically inappropriate. But sometimes things get a little bit out of hand, and it seems like that's what happened here with this Navy chief talking junk about the rest of the people in his command, or not the rest of them, but talking about certain people in the command. Some of them were included, like there was some naked pictures, not of anybody that was in their unit or anything like that, but naked memes type of thing, where maybe not the dick or tits, or maybe that's not out, but you have some inappropriate stuff. So they took this group chat and they did an investigation based on it. They ended up charging this Navy chief. He was convicted on three separate counts, and one of them was disrespect to a senior enlisted person, like those type of things, like the disrespect route. But they got it from the group chat. How do you feel about what you're saying in a group chat being used in a court martial? And not like if you admit to a murder or something like that, obviously, like in your text message. Yes. But if you're amongst peers, because these are peers, even though like an EA, E7, they're peers, right? Like they're in the same type of group. It'd be like for us, a corporal and a sergeant. Sure, the sergeant obviously outranks the corporal, but that's the NCO corps. And for us, it would be like a E6 to an E8, like bullshit and talking back. I think E9s are a little bit different, but you'll have first lieutenants and captains. They go back and forth because they're not that far off, you know, like depending on the billet that you have. I don't know if it's a good idea that you have to police every single thing that you say. Like, I know that it can go too far, for sure. It could go too far. But how slippery is that slope of people looking at your work-related chats? And how does that affect camaraderie? What do you think?
So it's a very slippery slope, because all it takes is one time and then people feel violated because they think they're talking in private.
Yeah.
And I would say, I don't know if it was outlined here. I didn't see anything. If these were on government issued phones, listen, they have a little bit more jurisdiction there. You're on a work phone, work computer. We've seen, you know, emails exchanged on work computers. It's the same thing when, you know, you're dealing with text messages, that we've seen cases where emails on work or government issued devices. I don't know if that's the case here. If it's not the case and it's just people's personal cell phones, I would just say this. I think you need to be, and it's tough because you think you're among people who are quote unquote cool, right? And they're not going to ever rat you out. And it's a safe space that you can kind of be a little loosey goosey. I would just say, if it were me and I was in a group chat with enlisted NCOs or even other officers, I would still be weary to ever put something in writing that I would not want out there publicly.
And I think that's a good theory, but actual, like being actually around these people all day and goofing and bullshitting all day, like you can try to be as professional as you can, but those walls are going to start coming down the longer that that group chat and that group is together.
Yes, I agree with you. I do think it gets a little more collegial and jokes start to fly. And
excellent West Point word.
Thank you. I have to, you know, use words from time to time just to remind people.
I threw out tertiary like it was secondary earlier. You don't say shit about it.
It's just weird though too, because as we know, the UCMJ is so different than civilian law.
Yeah.
And it's like UCMJ kind of uses that to their advantage a lot of times and will make things more strict where they will execute on certain orders that if it were done in the civilian world, like if my personal cell phone was taken by Barstool and they went through it, I probably have a pretty strong case to sue them. Yeah.
One of the things that they put to give, like, because I think it's not like a nude person. And in my mind, like if you're in the military and you can't handle seeing a dick that was drawn on a porta potty, in my opinion, especially from the enlisted side, you're in the wrong lane of work. Like you just are, it's a part of the culture and people can say, oh, it shouldn't be all this stuff. It is. And it's not going away. Like that kind of shit between the type of people that join the military 40 years younger, it will always be funny to us or them now at this point. It'll all be funny to have a tank that has the cannon as a loose cock on the end, like that is like drooped down. Always going to be funny, no matter what. So if you have people now that are getting offended by that or putting that in, I understand, and you have the full right to be offended about whatever you want to, blah, blah, blah. But you are not going to change the culture as far as that goes. And I'm not sure, you have to have looseness. This isn't a job where you can be rigid all the time. It's just not.
Yeah. And it's so, I'm reading the article here. It really gets down to the nitty gritty in terms of troops were criminally liable only if they conveyed disrespectful language while the victim was in the execution of his or her office. In other words,
the victim was loaded, right?
The victim has to be on duty when the disrespectful language occurred. So if these
and that's so insulting to real victims, like you're a victim because you saw a meme. Grow up, Peter Pan.
Well, it's saying you're a victim because you received it at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and that's during working hours, as opposed to like 8 o'clock in the evening when you're technically at home.
You're a wank off sign. Like, grow up, dude. Like, you can't run a force that is designed primarily to be the Department of War and be nervous whenever you see a meme come across. Like, there's a difference between sexually harassing someone and sexually assaulting someone and all those different things that we've talked about ad nauseum here because it's a big thing in the culture.
Yeah.
But I could see how you could make that argument. That's a slippery slope too. Like, but that's the deal when you're dealing with this demographic.
Yeah. I think it's weird. We're talking about memes here. If you were talking about, a nude photo of somebody in the unit, I would say that is absolutely not okay.
Oh, like if a nude photo is meme, right away.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. A meme of a cartoon, I don't know. I think,
right.
Where does that end?
Maybe in negative counseling at the most. You know, like you brought in somebody like, hey, you need to be mindful about what's going on. You in this position and being part of the Chiefs mess requires you to have more of a high moral standard. You just need to bear that in mind. Whether you're talking to a junior troop or you're talking to a peer, you need to maintain and be above reproach at all times. Like you could do that type of counseling, and I think it's fine. court martial, somebody that was almost had been 20 years and making that chief be downgraded and reduce his pay when on or her pay on retirement by $300-$400 a month for the remainder of their natural life for showing a dick that was drawn on a porta potty. There would be no E7s or E8s that got their full retirement. They're just
and this is also it seems like a group chat among senior leaders who you know are just have a good relationship. So the one thing, and I think this is a byproduct of people not understanding culture sometimes. The third message that got Brown into trouble involved a high school yearbook photo of another unit chief identified as SC that Brown sent to the group, quote, voted most likely to steal your, and I'm going to say girl. There was another word used, but voted most likely to steal. That's a compliment. That's like saying like, he's a good looking person. And, you know,
that's offensive now.
That's offensive.
He looks like the type of dude that'll steal your bitch. Like that's a pop culture reference. On 100,000 million, like that's just a
Mr. weird way
Steal
of saying
your girl.
Yeah, right? That's just a weird way of saying like, he's a good looking guy. You know, keep an eye on him. Not
and
that
you
he
can
is...
do it as a joke, like somebody looks terrible, like he's on his way to steal your girl. Like we do that all the time here at Barstool. Like it's a thing. I don't know, man. I think it's a slippery slope. I don't think man should be able to do that unless there's like a legitimate crime. Because this is just fishing. Like I have to think that maybe this person was a shitbag because there's people like that that's in the like in the Chiefs mess.
Oh, and they were just looking for a reason.
They were looking for something. Yeah, you know, like I could see that too. Hopefully, that's the case that the dude was just garbage and they didn't bust somebody down that had that.
I guess overall, unless there's a very serious crime that's taking place, I don't like the idea of people's phones just having the ability to take someone's phone at the drop of a hat and say, "Hey, let me look at your phone."
No, I completely agree. I agree. All right, let's move on to some save rounds and alibis, which today is going to be presented by our good friends at Zen. You guys know we're all about keeping it real, so let's talk about something making a real change for vets in active duty right now. We're talking about Zen nicotine pouches. If you're looking for a new way to enjoy nicotine, America's number one nicotine pouch comes in 10 varieties like wintergreen, spearmint, coffee, and two strengths. We got a 3 milligram to kick off your experience, and then 6 milligrams when you want to take it up a notch. Zen is smoke-free, spit-free, and hands-free, giving you more freedom to move. Plus, it comes as is. There's no batteries or device needed to get your Zen on, which is one less thing to worry about on your next trip to the PX. Look, when it comes to making a change, we know progress is more important than perfection. Zen knows it too, because everyone's on a different path. If you're curious about what a premium nicotine experience looks like, head to your local convenience store, PX, or Zen.com to find out. Warning, this product contains nicotine, and nicotine is an addictive chemical. All right, let's do some save rounds and alibis. Cons, what do you got?
Have you seen this nonsense about Ron DeSantis and his boots?
Oh, how they have, like, lifts?
I
love it.
It's so ridiculous, man.
It's like Dave's tippy-toe pictures.
Yeah, can you imagine? I mean, like, by nature, cowboy boots already have a – like, how tall is Ron DeSantis? Do you
I
know?
He's like 5'6", 5'7".
Oh, okay. So he's dealing with it.
He's a short fella. Yeah.
That's Shout out, Nick. Cause I mean, yeah. Shout out Nick. boots by nature are already going to give you, a couple inches more so than a standard dress shoe is going to. So then to go one level above that, and I've seen the pictures. It's almost like he's walking on a high heel, but it's concealed by the boot. So he's walking weird. And it's just funny to me that in our political sphere, all the things that get considered, and I get it. Listen, that's the height on a
guy.
He
might be taller than 5'6". I just looked it up. Maybe. But he says he's 6 foot. Brother, okay. Planet are you 6 foot.
There's a delta the size of the Grand Canyon between 5'6" and 6 foot. Like, maybe you're our guy, Nikki Smokes, who got called to the carpet and he's 5'11". You were like, oh, well, I'm 6 foot. We see that all the time and in all walks of life. But to be 5'6", trying to pass yourself as 6 foot, buddy, I mean, if you're trying to make that lie happen, I can't take you seriously. I can't look you in the face and take anything you say seriously.
Oh, well, they said that he actually might be like 5'10".
Okay.
But on the boots, it takes him up to 6'2". What do you think? I mean, I don't know you can elect a guy for president that's insecure about his height. Didn't affect Eisenhower.
Right. I mean,
didn't affect James Madison or
5'10 is 5'10 is not 5'3, you know?
That was John Adams. John Adams, yeah. 5'3.
That's a level of insecurity that I don't know. That's just pretty ridiculous. And then to go to those lengths to prop yourself up. But I just think it's funny that in our political sphere, all the ropes and the hoops that people jump through to try to bolster their own image as though we don't see right through it each and every time.
And he also said this week, did you see the craziness that he said that elementary school teachers in Florida can be a lot like Hamas in trying to brainwash children to believe liberal ideas? Listen, the same thing as Hamas? Like, dude, come on, bro.
Listen, I think there's certain groups that you just stay away from in comparison. You know, first being Nazis. The Nazis. Mm-hmm. Don't ever compare anything to the Nazis. That's just never going to end well. And I think we can add Hamas to that list. Of
or ISIS, just, like any ISIS, like if you have devoted your life to teaching young children at the huge pay scale of $45,000 a year in Florida, you're not Hamas. You're just not. You're a person that cares about the education of young people and you're trying to do the best that you fucking can. Yeah. Anything else?
No, that was it. Just kind of made me chuckle the idea of him like walking around his tippy toes.
And he was like, there is no denying the way that it's like he's wearing the high heel boots. Like,
he looks like
Taylor Swift.
You know what he looks like? He looks like when a young girl puts on her mom's high heels and doesn't know how to walk and they're too big. That's what he looks like.
Yep. The cowboy boot version of that. My save round, I went to the VA here. I've never had an established PCM here. I have TRICARE. So initially I was trying to use TRICARE so I can go to a civilian provider because I've never done that in my natural life. My dad was in the Navy, so I always went to TRICARE. I've never had the opportunity to go to a civilian doctor, but after all the hassle and trying to find one, that was impossible to take our insurance. So I was like, I'm going to go over to the VA and see what that was like. I expected it to be a nightmare where it was going to take me a couple months to get a new PCM or get established with the PCM. Nope. I called last Thursday and they said, do you want to come in? And I said, I guess best or soonest available. And they were like, all right, we have tomorrow afternoon at 3:00 and 4:00. I was like, you what? Like tomorrow afternoon. I was like, what about anything on Monday? And they're like, yeah, we have a 9:11. They had all these different open spots that gave me the ability to choose like based on the convenience of my work day. So that was awesome. I went to the appointment. I'm a Marine, so I got there 15 minutes prior, 5 minutes prior, or about 10 minutes prior. I only waited for like 5 minutes. I didn't even have time to really go through my entire timeline on Twitter before I from driving to whenever I got there. I go into the office, and then when's the last time you went to a medical doctor on base? Like
on base?
Like whenever
2011?
Yeah. So you go in. And if you remember, whenever you talk to your PCM there, at least it was this way in San Antonio, you could only talk about two things. So if you had like you had really bad allergies, you hurt your shoulder or not even hurt your shoulder. You have eyes going on, you have your throat going on, and then you have like an ingrown toenail. You can only do two things at one doctor's appointment, only tell them about two things. And then you got to make another one because they only have 15-minute blocks. Oh, I sit down with the doctor at the VA. And she was like, we have blocked off an entire hour for you. So we're going to go from toes to head. And I want you to explain everything like they. But the first screening, they talked to me about the PACT Act. They talked to me about sexual harassment. Did I ever experience sexual harassment or sexual assault when I was in? We went through every part of my medical history. And she was like, I'm not going to look at your chart. You tell me what you think is going on with your body, because you know it better than these charts that are from years ago with you. And I was like, okay. So I tell him everything. I'm like, I'm worried I have sleep apnea. I'm snoring all the time. And she said, okay, well, let's do a sleep study. Do you want to do it at a hotel? Do you want to do it at the hospital? Or do you want us to send the equipment to your house? And I was like, what? It's like this kind of service. So they're sending it, the sleep apnea machine, to my house, or the tester that does it. And then the doctor will look through the app that they use if I have it. And if I do, I don't even have to go back in. They send the machine to my house with a QR code that I scan on my phone, and it walks me through how to set it up right away.
That's awesome. Wow.
I said, I have this mole on my back. I want to get checked out. She was like, it does look a little bit odd. We're going to make a consult to dermatology. While I was sitting here, they're like, it might take a couple days for you to get yours together. Look, Cons, during this podcast, they've called me 3 times to try to get me to make that appointment. And they said, if you don't answer, we're going to call back in like 15 minute intervals because so many veterans put it off. We want you to answer the phone and actually do those. Not only that, did they look at that? They were like, are you up to date on like your COVID booster, your flu shot? When's the last time you've done labs? And I was like, it's been a while. I probably am due for the COVID and I haven't had the flu shot yet. And I haven't done blood work in forever. And what she sent a little email, like typed it out, sent it. Next thing I know, a nurse comes in with the vaccines and with the blood draw. I didn't even have to go down to the lab, dude. Like they brought the nurse to me. Like I'm in there with the doctor. She's still telling stuff while the other one is giving me the shots and pulling blood. And she's still talking to me. I was in and out a full body like examination, 45 minutes, no wait time. They're mailing me my medications that they prescribed to me where I didn't even have to go to the pharmacy. Unbelievable, dude. Like I could not believe it.
Top to bottom, it sounds like. I mean, I think the VA is doing a great job trying to get better. I do think still people are adverse to using VA because maybe they have one bad experience, but I think they're making a lot of improvements. I also think not every VA is created equal. So
true. You know, very true.
To, you know, credit the Midwest, you get people in the Midwest who are nice and helpful. Those are the people that are working at your local VA, right?
Uh-huh. And I also think that coming from Military City, USA, where San Antonio has the most veterans per capita of any city in the United States. They just have so many more to deal with than here. I mean, when I was in the waiting room, like the emergency room waiting, there was like 6 people that were standing there. And you know why? Because the PCM told me, if you have something that's acute and you need to, like, if you're feeling really sick, like you might have strep throat or anything like that, send me a message. I will find you a spot that day so you could come in and get whatever you need. So you don't have to go to the emergency room. Just send me a message. We'll work with your schedule. I'll try to fit you in for a 15, 20 minutes so we can see what the issue is and then send you on your way. I was like, dude, this is unbelievable. If you have VA healthcare insurance and you are able to go get your treatment, could not recommend it more. And if you need help like setting it up, usually I give Cons his email out at cons@barstoolsports. You can email him if you want to thank me for this little part of the segment and he'll relay that. But if you need help and you want to learn to navigate, because it can be a little bit confusing based on the website, more than happy to help any of the veterans that listen to this show. Get you going, because I feel like everybody deserves that, man. Like if you have a good experience with a doctor and you're like, holy shit, this is why it shouldn't be that way. That should be, they're able to do it.
Yeah.
It's very clear they're able to do it. So let's do it for everybody. Let's figure out how to do it for everybody. Last thing, again, we're going to miss Kate. The listeners are going to get miss Kate. Me and Cons are going to have some different things. We're going to have some more interviews. We're going to do some Band of Brothers stuff with other people that work at Barstool. And you already know when the new Spielberg and Tom Hanks documentary or series comes out, we're going to be heavy on that. Maybe even do some live watches, things of that nature, because I'm stoked about that. Because I feel Generation Kill was good. Wasn't even in the same ballpark. One, because I don't think the producers had nearly as much knowledge and history about what was going on in Generation Kill as they did about Band of Brothers and all the different
That's
research.
That's a good point. There'd been so much more written about it and, you know, the book. And I know there was a book for Generation Kill, but I just seemed like they were so far removed that just there was more information available to make it a more accurate depiction.
Generation Kill came out 5 years after it happened.
That's too soon.
Right. So now you have all this time to research it. Can't wait for that. Yeah, that's it. We love Kate. We'll miss her. I'm sure you do too. But me and Cons will keep the ship steered, or the tank. I guess he doesn't want ships.
Thank you. Steered.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Sound the retreat.